Welcome everyone to RSD 13, Rivers of Conversations, Rivers of Conversations around Systems Thinking. This is the online portion, which where we have different conversations that are all in the theme of systems thinking today. So this is the final session today, Monday, October 21st. It's my pleasure to host. I'm what is considered a river guide, so that means I'm guiding some of the conversations today. But it also happened to play double duty because I have been recently hosting some of these Systems Thinking Ontario sessions. So we were super delighted that RSD reached out and said, "Hey, if you stick to your consistent timing and your consistent Monday, it happens to overlap or run concurrently with RSD. Can we feature you all?" And we said, "Certainly." So that's why this session is on RSD, on the RSD platform. Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you to the team. So this one is called Systems Convening, like a retrospective, introspective, and prospective. But essentially, we're going to be talking about this meetup that has been running for a number of years called Systems Thinking Ontario. There's a couple of folks on the call here today that have been around in and around this community for quite a number of years. I myself don't have the same longevity as they do. And as I call them up or throw up some priming questions to get us started, maybe they can introduce themselves a little bit. Actually, we're a small crew. I'm going to do the typical Systems Thinking Ontario fashion to go around the room and introduce ourselves because we have the time and we have the size to do that. So why don't I call out your names on my screen? You can sh just tell us who you are and tell us what brought you here today. Jessica?
Hi everyone. My name's Jessica. I came across Systems Thinking Ontario quite a few years back, and I sort of lost touch. And when I went away, I went for school during COVID time, and now I'm actually currently in Massachusetts at the Conway School of Design for a master program on ecological design. So I have a little bit of background in information systems on the system engineering perspective, and I've been interested in many different things, and so have a lot, quite a few waypoints. And I really appreciated the time that I was able to participate in person at the Systems Thinking Ontario meetings at OCAT for a period of time, and that sort of fueled me into taking even a windier route to where I am at the moment. So I'm still learning, and just thought it would be great to touch base again and see how things are. And so here I'm back. So.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here. And yeah, we'll touch on the benefits of in-person and virtual, and maybe we'll reflect on that as well. Angel C.
Yeah, thanks. My name is Angelsia, and I'm here in Calgary, Alberta. I'm familiar with some of the systems work done with the Alberta Energy, Department of Energy. And I think that was led by Alex Ryan, who is now in Toronto. So I was interested in what the systems thinking community was doing in Ontario.
Wonderful. And thank you for the clarification. And Jelsia, thank you.
No worries. Thanks so much.
David Hawk. David, I'll just get you to unmute and then you can.
Okay, now can you hear me?
You're good.
I do have a relationship, I guess, to the system science people. My major work is in the area of what's increasingly called climate change, which I began back in 75 and worked with some of the ostensibly leaders of system science from the 50s, 60s, 70s of the time, and then did this work, which the first book that I produced from it was in 79, which was okay, except heavily rejected. The dean of my school, which it was a PhD for that school, rejected it almost violently and wanted to make sure that I never got a PhD for working on climate change, and went on and on for another year or two, but finally it passed. Anyway, I've continued since that time writing a number of books. That 79 book was republished, I guess, 40 years later in 2019. And that book since became popular with the American vice president. And so she has chatted with me a time or two about it. And she had it placed in the Library of Congress as an example of how bad off we are. And in our conversation, she wanted to talk about the follow-up book, but since it has a swear word in the title, she says she's not allowed to mention that book because we're being taped and she's not allowed to say things like that. Anyway, that book last summer went off to the Philippine Book Festival and won an award because it's outside the U.S. and that word's okay. Recently, I went to the Frankfurt Book Festival and again won an award. And about 50 people there wrote reviews of that book. Again, since it wasn't in America, that word was okay. And so now I'm reading through their discussion, their reviews. Can things really be as bad as I say? They look pretty bad with that book that got republished in 2019 as Too Early, Too Late, Now What, which is the one the vice president put in the Library of Congress. But now this book is much clearer that came out in December. And currently I'm just ready to publish a third book, which is even clearer without swear words in the title. And so I'm turning old and wimpy. But nonetheless, it all comes out of system science work. And David Ng has been along a good share of this work. And yes. And appreciate David's existence.
Thank you, David. Thank you, David Hawk. Appreciate that. So yeah, maybe just Cheryl May, just briefly introduce yourself and what brought you here this evening or this time of day, wherever it is.
Yeah, it's a weird color, aren't I? I'm sort of strange color. it's just coming evening here. I'm in Toronto. You're in Toronto, aren't you? Yeah. I'm one of the RSD 13 organizers, along with Angelsia, who does the newsletter. And this is my 50th session in 9 days. So I'm not incredibly coherent, but wanted to join you. I haven't joined many Systems Thinking Ontario meetings over the years, and I've always wanted to. So here I am.
Wonderful. Thank you. Perrin, if I'm pronouncing that.
Yep, that's right. Hi. I don't know if you can see me. I'm Perrin. I don't have my lights on right now. So I study sustainability, complexity, and I've spoken with David Ng about his work in the past. I'm a little bit familiar about what you guys do here, and I've been hanging out as in the RSD 13 conference, and so just wanted to hear a little bit more about what this group is doing.
Wonderful, thank you. And for the last folks I'll call on are closer to the longevity of this meetup. So you don't have to share all your background. We'll get into that in the conversation, but just briefly, you can share your name, where you're calling in from, and what brought you here this evening. Kelly Okamura.
Hi, I'm Kelly Okamura. I'm based in downtown Toronto. And I've been with Systems Thinking Ontario for a long while. I don't know. What else do you want me to say right now?
That's good.
Okay.
We'll get into that. Tim L.
Yeah, Tim here. I'm in Toronto as well. I'm here because I'll just say originally Elena probably is the person who connected me in with the event or the Systems Thinking Ontario that got me to get going. And then it was really kind of a meaningful kind of a time when at some points I helped organize. So I really enjoyed it a lot. And so even though I haven't been as active recently, it's significant enough that I wanted to show up today. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, Tim. Elena?
I have been active in the systems field for probably around 40 years now, since Barry Clemson introduced me to the field of cybernetics back at grad school. I ended up partnering with Stafford Beer and have been mainly using his models of viable system model and the team's integrity process, but also have been very interested in using those with respect to sustainability issues, and also with respect to just, you know, helping nonprofits be able to manage things better, which, you know, quite often they have a real problem with. I've been active in a number of the societies, particularly the American Society for Cybernetics, the International Society for System Science, and Metaforum, which is the one devoted to Stafford's work and extending it. And I've been very happy to have a local group, Systems Thinking Ontario, and to have an opportunity to engage usually at least once a month. So happy about that.
Wonderful, thank you. Yeah, we're happy to have you, and we'll chat more about that. Last but not least, David Ng.
Thanks. Here in Toronto, I'll actually introduce myself by way of how I got into this particular event. It actually dates back to I was working at IBM, probably would be around 2008, and Peter Jones had just moved to Toronto. We joined the faculty, and I do a lot of blogging. And so he actually sent me an email note and said, I noticed that you come to Toronto quite often. Could you please, you know, can we meet sometime when you're actually in town? And I said, I live in Toronto. I just travel a lot. And so that was kind of the beginning of the relationship with Peter, who's at the foundation of starting System Thinking Ontario as an outgrowth of Design with Dialogue. Peter, unfortunately, is time zone deprived right now, so he won't be joining us today.
Thank you for starting us off, David. Yeah, so the four here, David, Elena, Tim, and Kelly, have a long relationship with this, so we can all casually chat about it, but I'll get us started and weave some of the conversation about the history of this meetup, how it started, and what's its value, what's its importance. I'll start that by sharing something, actually. So this is the homepage that David Ng manages of Systems Thinking. And if I'm to scroll down, actually this meeting is described as the 125th meeting. So if I scroll down the left thing, I go all the way, oh my God, keep scrolling. Oh my God, still not there. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, we're at 2012, which doesn't have that much. And then David and Elena told me 2013, January 17th was the first official one. So starting here, maybe David and or Elena, you can both kind of share what was the genesis of this meetup? How did it start? Why did it come into existence? Can you maybe share a little bit of background about this?
Elena, I think you actually were going to Design with Dialogue meetings before I did.
I don't remember. What I do remember is you and I having a conversation in Crete, long before this started, and saying, you know, why do we only run into each other halfway around the world when we both live in Toronto? And we kind of kicked around the idea and realized that there were probably at least half a dozen folks in Toronto that come to these, to the other systems meetings. I think Stephen Davies was certainly one of them. And I'm trying to remember who the other one was, but certainly Judith Rosen, who's based in Rochester, was among that group. And I remember one time she came and we went out for brunch. And that was when we started thinking that we really needed to have a systems thinking group here.
And what were some of those systems, existing systems groups, Elena, that were already gathering?
Not necessarily here in Toronto, but with the American Society for Cybernetics and the International Society for System Science and the British Cybernetics Society, which they just call the Cybernetics Society. And there were also UK systems group and SCIO, which is another UK group that sometimes had people that kind of floated in and out of the city on travel. And we also had quite a good group here when we had the RSD in Toronto last time. And I remember Paul Pangaro was one of the featured speakers, and we were doing it in the Mars Center, which was an excellent venue.
Right. David, any memories or any recollection about the early days of starting up this meetup and
So there's some history that precedes this. And so in 2000, the World Congress on System Sciences was held at Ryerson. That was an ISSS meeting. And so Elena and I were both at that. ASC meeting in 2003, I believe, was at Ryerson in Toronto. Is that right, Elena? Yeah. And so I attended that. And then between the ASC meetings and the ISSS meetings, there were also meetings in Europe from the International Federation for Systems Research. And so we'd end up going to Austria for meetings. And so that was a running joke that I could bike to see Elena, but I have to get on a plane to see her at a systems conference. Then we actually started a meetup group coming up to the ISSS Waterloo 2010 meeting. So we're meeting monthly. At that point, we're actually meeting at a pub on Danforth. We hadn't quite affiliated then with OCAD. The people liked that. One thing I didn't like about meetup is that after you leave a meetup, you stop paying for the meetup, it disappears from the web, which is why we're on Google Sites and having the way that we've been announcing these meetings and using the technology that way. So I had started attending the Design with Dialogue sessions that Peter had. So he would have monthly meetings in person, and the facilitation was among designers learning facilitation techniques, and it'd be a different technique every month. And so Stephen Sillett is an example. I was at one of his sessions, and again, the body movement, these sorts of things, different approaches. And in the discussions, we end up having questions about which techniques, which methods would go together. And I guess Peter was also at that point teaching. He was teaching the systems classes in OCADU in the Strategic Foresight and Innovation program. So the question came, could we have discussions about systems and systems theory? Because the DWD was more about methods, and we'd start the discussions about having about approaching systems. But the question was, how should we actually do that? And Peter's tradition was to always meet in a circle, you have check in, check out, and he has these protocols. And we more or less copied them over into System Thinking Ontario. The difference was that the way that we originally started the meetings was centered on readings, and trying to resurface a lot of the old systems ideas. The original intent was that we can't really expect people to always do the readings. We try to get readings that were not that didn't require a university library access, and so people could look at them if they didn't, but we didn't assume that people would. But we would have a structure. This is based off in the DWD in January 2012. I ran a session on the meta design of inquiring systems. And the question was, how is it you actually organize creating knowledge in groups of people? And so we can go through the slides here. So the question about what do you know but what you don't know, and there's the idea of ignorance. and you get into the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns and how you might learn about that. But this leads you towards the idea of an inquiring system where you might sweep in new knowledge. And so the idea was that everyone would learn about whatever topic it would be at their own pace with whatever knowledge they had. The conversations were quite important, that the assumption would be that if you didn't know, it's like it's not your fault you didn't know, like we'll just talk about it. And I also was making this claim with a lot of systems work, people tend to gravitate to the library and say, oh, I need to read more, I need to read more. And I was saying, well, reading more actually doesn't help that much. It helps a little bit, but it's actually much more important to have discussions and questions and answers in a group. And so the structure originally was that we would have a reviewer of a paper, and then we would have a discussant who would talk about it, and that would start off a conversation between two people that would expand the group, and people would go, "Oh, what do you think about this?" or "What do you think about that?" So, one of the ones that was actually interesting, and Lenny can comment on this one, was Stafford Beer had done a Massey lecture. And so the recording was available. And so we actually had a session on that. Do you want to talk about that one a little bit, Elena?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of what he did in that Massey lecture, which was called Designing Freedom, sounded a little bit archaic. And one of the things I remember was that some people focused on this kind of more technocratic language and kind of didn't get that he was considered pretty much of a left-wing rebel. Partly because of his work in Chile, but also because of his general stance. But yeah, I think we had some interesting discussions on that. And also that's one of the things that CBC maintains. So anybody that wants to listen to it or read it can download that one for free. One of the other things I remember, I think it was from before we actually started, was Anatole Rapoport giving a talk at Allen's Pub on the Danforth. And that was pretty memorable. And another paper I remember that I think I was one of the lead discussion people on it was the McCullough and Pitts topology of nervous nets about the non-transitivity of any choices that involve pairs of two out of three, like rock, paper, scissors. And I thought that was an interesting thing for us to explore. That was quite a short paper, but I think a paper with a lot of profound implications.
I think that's a very helpful kind of picture of history and some historical threads that you've woven together, David and Elena, and some of the themes that are coming out for me is one is just the ability to meet folks who you know locally, but as you're mentioning, you don't get a chance to see them as often as you like, or you only see them on the circuit out in Austria or around the world. And another was about having a different pace of being able to have conversations versus reading more, only going after reading. So I think those are two themes that to me are coming out. But I want to bring Kelly into the conversation as someone who's been a long time attendee. Kelly, can you share a little bit about design with dialogue? Because I know you were there, you've been a part of that, and how that created the offspin of Systems Thinking Ontario and your experience going from one to the other, or being in both for a period of time as well.
Thanks, Sad, because that's always my intro is that I came from design with dialogue. I followed Peter Jones in terms of some of the sessions that he was doing, and one of the workshops that I gave for design with dialogue, that's how I met David Ng. And David came to the workshop and he said to me, "You don't understand systems." So I thought, all right, I'm chasing how to make new products for a finite planet. And if you can give me the answer through systems, I'll follow you. I didn't know when I agreed to be part of his research project that it was a 10-year project, but I certainly can appreciate how
much structure, or at least I don't sound like it, but having more verbiage or confidence in terms of some of the ways that I might look at a situation through a systems lens. I appreciate what David said, but I also really appreciate what Elena said, that you don't have the academics of science, the science of systems, but you, it's probably from a learned experience.
Right. So yours was more experience-based. This was a way, Kelly, for you to deepen your knowledge and learnings of system, but not having to go the academic or classroom route, but really embrace this conversational route. Is that correct?
That's right. I think that I diverted from the academics and went direct to the experts.
Gotcha.
So in addition to David and Elena, David Hawk is on the call, and I greatly appreciate my time spent with David Hawk, as well as the late Ian Mitrov, and other people that have been introduced to me through this group.
I noticed, thank you, Kelly. I noticed we also have Stephen Sillett on the call. Stephen, I'm not sure if you're listening actively or you're available, but you also played a role in co-organizing Design with Dialogue. And I just wonder if you had any reflections on opening that up to System Thinking Ontario as well. He might be, we'll come back to him. He might be stepped away. He might have logged in and just stepped away, but that's okay. Another person I'll bring in is Tim Lloyd. Tim, maybe you can share your introduction to both the field of systems and how you connected with the folks around Systems Thinking Ontario, and any insights into your role in even organizing some sessions. Do you look for subjects? Do you look for people who are coming through town? How do you kind of like bring everyone together or host different sessions?
Sure, yeah. For me, it was, I think, cybernetics is what kind of caught my imagination, which someone, I think, recommended speaking with Elena. That was the first person I sort of reached out to that connected me in with systems thinking. And then I attended for a long period of time, just learning and participating, and really enjoyed the discussions and the format. When David reminded us or reminded me of the circle and the opening and talked about where it came from, the tradition of DWD, it just kind of reminded me of being in those sessions, and I really appreciated that whole format and some structure, very simple structure to how the sessions would be approached, and I was attracted to it, even though DWD was sort of the kind of landing zone. I quickly kind of went over to systems thinking, just because I think I personally resonated more with that read a paper, discuss it kind of pattern a little bit, and was maybe a little more interested in the theoretical and I guess my experience of learning about the things I learned about in the first sessions was, even though you asked a bit about background maybe, but my background had been in engineering type things, systems, so was always a part of it from a technical standpoint. It's just part of the picture that you were dealing with that in study and work. But I was really, the mind was expanded greatly with all the things we learned, sitting around in that circle, I think, talking about the broader implications of systems. And it really stuck in my mind. I think it's Gerald Midgley, is it? The sort of critical, boundary critique. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Gonna check with people on that. But that kind of extension of systems thinking into more of like an ethical or a much more broadly conceived, well beyond any sort of technical system architecture or design or implementation type thinking, was really stuck with me, as well as just how the categories or the context or the application areas and domains of how systems thinking was what it was being drawn into was just so broad. That was really striking. And so when you ask, I'll pause now, I guess, but just about organizing, I think basically I when I first showed up and it was just the few of us, and I figured maybe you wonder like why I would show up, and I was going to joke that I was sort of the substitute teacher who showed up when David went to do his PhD for a little while, basically. So that's sort of how I related to the organizing. It was sort of felt like sort of just filling in for a period of time, as seemed necessary at the time. But I really enjoyed it, and I got into it and learned quite a bit more. And in terms of attracting content or people to speak, yeah, it was really trying to keep. I guess I was driven to keep extending and broadening that scope of application. So anything like that's why we used to, I remember, joke at the introductions of the sessions about how talk about anything. And like, I think we joked at times, like, is there anything we don't talk about at Systems Thinking Ontario? Is there anything that we don't try to look at or see or discuss or discover, discern the systems aspect or apply a systems thinking lens to or what have you, right? So I kind of, I guess, tried to extend that and keep going. So I was very open to anything and everything that came up. And I remember organizing a few that stretched that a bit. And those were really, really fun. So I don't know what else you asked, but I tried to cover a bunch of stuff you said.
Can totally relate to the being a substitute because I find myself doing that now as Peter Jones has gone to the Mexico so I'm kind of co-organizing with David Ng these days. Kelly, I do see your hand up, but I see Stephen Sillett's back. So I just want to maybe get him in and then we can go to you. Stephen Sillett, anything you want to share about the history of your interaction with Systems Thinking Ontario, but also recognizing that you've been a close participant in Designing with Dialogue as well, which Systems Thinking Ontario was an offshoot of. If you're on the phone, Stephen, you're on mute, but I can prompt you to unmute. Maybe that's part of the elusive nature of Stephen Sillett.
There we go.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Oh, well guessed. I frantically trying to sort that out. Yes, thank you. I think I came to systems thinking after Design with Dialogue, and I'm trying to remember. I was interested in the papers and I had a broad interest in systems because I was following systems thinking through the LinkedIn group for a number of years that was kind of going on, and had that forever question, what's a system? And that kept going backwards and forwards for a few years. And I think I was probably most interested in the human activity system kind of stuff. My work, because it was coming from the a lot of work with participatory processes and what's it like to be inside. And so it's been interesting in a way seeing the journey and seeing actually some of David's work where he's gone into the ecological psychology. And I sort of got into affordances through my work with participatory mapping, and then that sort of evolved and the complex adaptive system stuff has started to come in. And I suppose more recently I've got more interested in agent-based approaches. And exactly where does that fit in terms of it being a system versus maybe even something like BSM is kind of in this kind of in between. Like what is a system starts to become a question because a system is something that's an idea, right? From the outside. So from the inside. So I'm quite interested in like flat ontologies now, like the idea of flat ontologies in geography where you don't necessarily have a hierarchy. So you're just in it, but then you sometimes still have to talk about it. I suppose I've come in from a methodological point of view and then been getting more and more into the systemic kind of approach. Fascinating. I'll pass it over to Kelly and many others that I know here, but Kelly has been talking to me in the past, so it's probably a good time to segue.
Thanks, Stephen. Okay, so I just wanted to make the comment because we were talking about dialogue, and one of the aspects that was somewhat different from Design with Dialogue and Systems Thinking Ontario was the meetups after the sessions. I think there was a number of times, not coming from academia, that I didn't quite understand or it wasn't of interest to me, but always the meetups that we had afterwards, I could ask those more direct questions to the person that was that had introduced it or something that I didn't know. Or a lot of times the post session was much more interesting in terms of the smaller group dialogues.
Right. So the informal conversation after the event has wrapped, where you go somewhere and have a bite or something, provided a lot of like valuable learning experience just in that setting as an extension of it.
Right. I mean, it may have depended on whether I did the reading or not.
Right. No, I appreciate that, Kelly. That's a good point to add in terms of the structure. I think we kind of missed that yes, there is an informal gathering afterwards. And as David was saying, like more readings might not help, just having conversation does help. I do have more probing questions I can ask some of the core group, but I'll pause for a second and just maybe ask anyone who hasn't shared or hasn't spoken about it. Have there been any meetings that you've attended, Systems Thinking Ontario, or it could be DWD, and that, you know, are there any remarkable or notable ones that you've attended that come to mind that you want to share, you want to reflect on?
I will make a comment on if David Hawk wants to speak up, which is actually some topics I don't want to do, and entropy is one of them. And so when we went online because of COVID, one of the opportunities was to reach outside of that and invite people in. So David Hawk is big on entropy. I'm not.
Can you hear me? I can't see my image. Oh,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What I found particularly interesting about the comments from the Frankfurt Book Fair, there was a whole array of comments that focused on entropy as a way to finally understand climate change. And they had never thought of that. And they went into some detail on what that meant. And in essence, my insult to humans by favoring negative entropy, they seemed to appreciate a great deal. That I was sort of amazed that a strong cadre of those at that book festival, including a reviewer for New York Times books and other people like that, which wanted to go much deeper into that concept of entropy and climate change.
Yeah.
And particularly try and define my definition of negative entropy and how I make fun of humans and argue that at least 95% of TV ads, maybe 100, our negative entropy that in essence lies. And so the idea that when you buy a car, it'll never need serviced, that, you know, at least it'll maintain itself. So go ahead, buy. But in essence, entropy works on everything, including the human body. And so, you know, unless you're immortal, you probably ought to notice entropy. certainly it will notice you. But I was quite amazed that the German meeting went so deeply into that, whereas the Filipino meeting went so deeply into that swear word that I used in the title of the book. And they wanted to know why I did that and how I could do that, but they enjoyed it. It's quite interesting, but I am getting further into entropy, David, with time, and it is making more sense. And now I'm working on this book of the six dimensions that people live in, and in essence, entropy as the fourth dimension is terribly important. In essence, that's the masculine dimension, whereas the third dimension is nature, the feminine dimension. And so entropy is becoming increasingly important for the crap that I talk about. But keep in mind, it is crap. And all that.
Yeah. Thank you, David Hawk. I think so. There's subjects that, you know, that you guys touch on, there's some that you want to lean into, some that you don't. David Ng, you mentioned, actually, I'll come to another point, then we'll talk about the online era. So it's 2013 all the way to 2019. You've done all this. One of the things that came up in my own understanding of the history of systems thinking Ontario, because I only joined it when I started at OCAD SFI program, is that it touched on a number of schools. Like there was an intersection it had with OCAD, but also U of T and York University. Do you maybe want to just expand a little bit about why that is a relevant point at Systems Thinking Ontario and how it interacts with other communities?
Yes. So this is associated with my claim that Toronto is a system thinking hub of the world, and people don't really know about it. So for those of you who are at OCAD University, Peter Jones' knowledge of the history and the theory of systems is really, really deep. At the same time, we had at York University the Faculty of Environmental Studies, which actually should have been called System Studies. It would have been much clearer. And the work they did up there and their PhD program is very strong, originally based off the work of Eric Trist. And then at University of Toronto, Steve Easterbrook was working on climate issues and systems thinking. And this predates him actually, predates the School of the Environment that's actually now at University of Toronto. So originally we had that crossover because the universities don't actually have much of an opportunity in Toronto to meet with each other, and it's something that we should actually probably regenerate.
Was there a naming challenge that was always the case, like with System Thinking Ontario versus Toronto? Did that ever come up?
No, the reason we called it System Thinking Ontario was that we thought we would actually branch out and reach out to Waterloo and Wilfrid Laurier University as well. And so this is in the context of having run the ISSS 2010 meeting at Wilfrid Laurier University. We had Thomas Homer Dixon as one of our plenary speakers.
Gotcha. Okay, I did not know that's why it's called Ontario. I generally was like, what was the why decide the province level? Gotcha. Okay. And so you're what's it like being able to maintain, or how is it organized in such a way where you can maintain this happening every month? Was that exhaustive at times, like David, Tim, or others, or like how did you kind of keep that going for so many years?
So for me, the meeting is actually more important than the topic most of the times. And the opportunity of people to get together. And so the thing that I didn't want to have happen was me running all the sessions and picking all the topics, which is why it was really good to have Tim for a period of time take that lead.
Anything you want to expand on there, Tim?
Just that I guess it speaks to the fact that it was a really, like I said in earlier, really valuable, meaningful kind of a monthly event that had that like Elena alluded to, kind of the comfort and security and familiarity of a monthly kind of session, and seeing the group of people who would show up regularly again and again, and getting to have great discussions. It was just fantastic discussion. And so for me, it was sort of just a matter of well, this must continue. So I just kept kind of doing some organizing in that, and it was very informal. There was no formal handoff or anything. David, you did a few. We would back and forth it for the f first some, and then you kind of got a little busy, and so I'd do a bunch, just kind of do a run of organizing, and then you'd show up and have something new, and then you came back, I guess, after formally finishing some of the schooling that was occupying your time, and got back into it more fully. But yeah, for me, it was just keeping it going and enjoying it myself. So I think I may the only thing I'll say is maybe I might have gotten a little theoretical during my time. I might be the stage of the academic intensity a little bit. I don't know if people see it that way, but sometimes I wonder if that's how I might my little twist might have been a little bit maybe in the abstract, and like I said earlier, trying to reach out and go everywhere with systems thinking a bit,
All right. Elena, you wanted to jump in here?
I wanted to say there's no risk of our running out of topics,
Right.
either through papers or through things that are coming up in the world. And interestingly, some of the papers and theoreticians that we read who are no longer with us, like Kenneth Boulding and Donella Meadows, are people who were very involved in sustainability and in respect for nature. And that seems to have been, you know, something that showed up from the earliest of our meetings. And I'm thinking of Kenneth Boulding, who back in, I think, the late 80s, was at Waterloo with Rob Hoffman and Bert McGinnis. And Stafford and I were part of that discussion. But at that point, they had gathered together a group to talk about the Brundtland Report and its implications. So the focus and the interest in sustainability and ecological considerations goes way back.
Right. And so that's a continuous theme that you saw as valuable as having a continued conversation on through
the
content.
Yeah, and not that every topic has to do with that, but enough do.
Right.
And sometimes we would have things that were more participative, like Aleko Christakis came through one year.
Do you want to share a little bit about that? That actually sounds interesting.
Well, I think it was when we had the RSD in Toronto, is he came through and did a session for Ontario Systems Group, where he essentially led us in the, you know, kind of a demo version of the structured dialogic design, or now I think it's structured democratic design. At any rate, it keeps changing a little bit, but the focus remains the same.
Yeah, that helps give a sense of the different types of topics. And as I understand, you even had sometimes a student might come and present their major research project, or you might have a guest visitor who's coming through town. Is there a sense of the breadth of topics, David, or anyone that you kind of comes to mind as to like what are the different focus areas that Systems Thinking Ontario would touch on?
I'll just jump in and just say, PASC and those folks and Second Order and the whole many orders of the systems thinking, so sort of scaling it in the reentrant kind of abstraction, and also we had a counselor, a psychological counselor, who showed up, who had a systems thinking practice specifically, you know, that they studied and applied in their psychological counseling, and then I guess biological, there was a lot of biological and sort of life sciences type of things, sort of systems things that came up, as well as the social systems and almost political and the boundary critique scope. So yeah, I mean, and Elena like said it very well, never run out of topics. So I'm sure anyone could list five more things along that scope.
One thing I'd like to quickly add is that I found the student presentations of their projects to be very, very insightful and very inspiring of how far they'd been able to get using the tools.
Nice. I wish Peter was on to hear that, but that's very glad to hear, especially coming from you, Elena. I think many of the students would really appreciate that. And that's why I think this meetup is so valuable, as it is tied to the hip with OCAD, even informally in some ways. It provides a great opportunity. I know that in the summer, for example, we do something where we feature the synthesis maps that are produced in the semester in the spring. So it gives the students a chance to share it with an audience outside of their classmates. And that is always something we all appreciate in the systems community. So to fast forward through time a little bit, we go through 2013 all the way up to 2019. Then David Ng, around this time, you are managing many of the Systems Thinking Ontario sessions, and COVID happens. And obviously there is a natural shift to going online. Was there any sessions online before that? And what was that shift like? And can you maybe share, and then the others can share, about the pros and cons, which I feel like are common, about in-person engagements and online?
So Tim will actually remember some of my arguments about this before, because I really like the format of meeting in a circle in person. And my experience with hybrid conferences is that you either organize for the people that are in the room or you organize for the people that are online, and you really can't do one or the other. And so I was pushing hard to keep System Thinking Ontario meeting in person with all of the people in a circle. Lambert Lounge used to be great for that. And then COVID happened. It's kind of like, well, that's not going to happen anymore. So we could meet online. The shift was not that difficult, really, because we've had a core group of people who have been coming regularly to the meetings. During COVID, I thought it was a smooth transition over.
And did that allow you to expand who you might invite as well? Like, that's what I understand as well, based off of different people obviously connecting online, right?
Yeah, so this overlapped also. We had the in 2019, the beginning of 2019, we had started the System Changes Learning Circle, and that was an offshoot from System Thinking Ontario. And so, I had proposed that when I was president of the ISSS in 2011, 2012, my theme was rethinking systems thinking, because I thought that much of system thinking is frozen in the 1980s, and we need to progress beyond that. And so the advice I'd gotten, I spent 2014 to 2017 in the pattern language community. And the advice I got there was that if you want to actually make progress on something, you really need to do it locally. And so it would have been in December 2018, I actually proposed for some people from System Thinking Ontario join me on a separate project on the System Changes Learning Circle and focus on that. And with that happening, I also ended up teaching. The schedule was that in winter of 2020, Peter was teaching the Understanding Systems course, and Jeremy Bowes, who usually teaches half the course, went on sabbatical. So I taught that with Lorraine and Peter, and so that kind of energized all of the discussions around larger topics, particularly a turn towards systems changes from system thinking and what the difference was. But when that happened, we had, in effect, a group of people that had been coming regularly, and just moving them online. I think they welcomed it. In COVID, I think that with people all shut in together, maybe that was an opportunity for people to blow off some steam.
Right. Maybe I'll just open that generally to everyone on the call, not necessarily the main panelists here, but does anyone have any reflections, thoughts, or comments about your own experiences around convening around the topic of systems online, versus perhaps when you may have done it in certain communities or smaller circles in person? What are some of the trade-offs that you valued, or any comments or thoughts about that?
I'm just going to say, if I think about missing the people, many of whom are here, I only think of the in person. I don't, my memory of that emotion or feeling is not, I don't picture the screen and the squares. I picture being in Lambert Lounge, talking in person, walking across the foyer.
Right. Anyone else have any experiences, even if it's not in Systems Thinking Ontario, any other reflections that you might have about the benefits and challenges of convening around systems online versus in person? Sure, Kelly.
I mean, as far as trade-offs go, the you just dropped some links that would have been more difficult in person. They could have been written down, but it's certainly an easy grab for something as simple as that. The other opportunity when we went online was to expand it to a much broader audience that they weren't just passing through. But for example, with David Hawk on the call right now, I don't know that I would have had that opportunity had we kept it to a local meetup.
Right.
But I do like the meetups as well. I was disappointed that this one wasn't at the Center for Social Innovation.
See that we have, I'm not gonna try not to put you only on the spot, but Stephen Davies, welcome. Thank you for joining. We were doing it, we were chatting with a little bit of the folks who've been long-standing either participants or organizers. And I was wondering, maybe Stephen, just to give you the microphone, if you want to share your experience of how you got into systems and particularly Systems Thinking Ontario as a meetup and what value that's provided you.
Thanks for the invitation, Zad. I appreciate it. My introduction to systems was through mathematics. I did an undergraduate degree in mathematics, looking at systems of partial differential equations in three variables and solving those systems of equations. Solving them usually meant that we were given a set of initial conditions and a set of boundary conditions, and solving it usually meant, you know, either finding local minima or local maxima of the function across a three-dimensional space. And so that, I mean, that was all very well and good, you know, when you're solving physics problems, or when you're able to translate a challenge into a mathematical system of equations. And then I graduated in 1986, and I didn't read a book for 3 years. I was literally traumatized by my degree. It was a really intense experience. And then I made the mistake of picking up the book called Chaos in 1989. And in that book, I learned that my university degree covered about 3% of real world problems, those that could actually be expressed in mathematical equations that could be solved. And I mean, it's useful for control theory and control systems and everything else, but that was my introduction to open systems and to systems that had simple feedback that had fractal dimensions on those feedback loops. And that really launched me into a meaningful inquiry into what does it mean to live in an open system. I was then blessed in 1993 or 92 to be introduced to Elena's partner, Stafford Beer. And while most people think that that introduction might mean VSM, for me, it did not. It meant team integrity. And so I loved team integrity from the get-go because the geometry of the icosahedron was a highly symmetrical system. There's 120 degrees of symmetry in an icosahedron. And when I looked at the protocol that Stafford had invented for creating non-hierarchical ways of convening and having dialogue, I was blown away. I spent the next 4 or 5 years delivering syntegrations across the world. I've delivered syntegrations on 5 continents. Over 85 or 90 syntegrations. And so for me, that actually moved me. I mean, as a system for convening and a system for dialogue and as a system for allowing for the emergence of group coherence and group cohesion and community, I mean, I found nothing else that even compares. It is the most powerful social technology I think I've ever used, and it's in person, and it's best in person. And so when STO first arose, I was intrigued because I think that was during my first, that was while I was teaching at OCAD, and obviously Peter was involved, and so I was intrigued by the possibilities. And it's funny because David and I were just, we had tea at my place on Thursday afternoon, and David explain to me what the transition was into STO from Design with Dialogue, which obviously was the series of conversations that Peter had hosted and facilitated for years, long before I joined OCAD. And David helped me understand how the transition, what that transition was intended to do. And so I think, you know, there is no substitute for meeting in person. I mean, I love the fact that we're meeting tonight on Zoom, because I had family commitments that kept me until about 7:15. And I was able to join. Whereas if I had tried to travel down to the Lambert Lounge, I would be arriving at the end of the session. So it's hard to fault the virtual forms of engaging, because they are so enabling, and I get to see your face and Kelly's face and Cheryl and Elena and David, you're all here. Stephen Sillett, I haven't seen Stephen Sillett in almost 2 years. So I welcome him and Tim as well. Tim, it was great to see your face on here. So I don't think I've answered the question other than to say that, you know, there is no substitute for face-to-face engagement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the words are great, and we can speak to one another, but there's so much in a field. If you can create a field, a vibrational field that is then inductive, it's just so much more powerful than doing it online. I've seen it done online with very careful facilitation, but it still doesn't have the power of in person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thoughts on the online versus in person. And just generally, I hear David's call for renewal.
Mm-hmm.
I think David's call for renewal is an important call. I really love the fact that he's sounding that call, because it really forces us to get over ourselves and say, well, what are we going to do next, people?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Thank you. You answered a bunch of questions well, even poetically, while forming them. So I appreciate that, Stephen Davies. And I think there's a couple of themes that show up throughout the conversation that we've had, even prior to your joining, but even in those comments, about almost this group being a manifestation of an open system, of a living system that has transitionary stages, and it has interweaves, and it has knots, in the David Ng metaphor that he describes systems as weaving through time. And so it's quite interesting to then, yes, recognize the challenges and the affordances of the online versus in person, which, you know, challenges us when we can't be together, and what limitations that provides, and the affordances that it opens up in terms of breadth and scale and who can and can't be involved for convenience factors. So I think that's well noted, and those are some of the themes that I'm noticing. Tim, were you going to jump in?
I was just going to say, I think someone asked about flat ontology, and I think the spirit of what you just articulated off the back of what Stephen was expressing about in person is almost like maybe a feeling into what is meant by flat ontology. And the metaphor that came to mind, I didn't venture to throw it in the chat because, you know, it would be nonsensical, I suppose, just randomly by itself. But the metaphor, now that I'm putting it in context, that I was sort of wanted to throw in there, was sort of flat ontology is sort of like the agile mat of the real systems, you know, when everything is all there, it's all there, which is kind of what Stephen, I think, is pointing to as a distinction there. So no big, you know, just as an aside that
right.
The content and the context and everything you were just saying and how you just put it all together, I think that's what is being sought or reached towards by flat ontology that came up earlier. And I think actor network theory was one example when I tried to look up a reference, and also Deleuze and Thousand Plateaus and those folks trying to just grapple with the innitness, the kind of that's the spirit of that flat ontology. But yeah, I just wanted to take the opportunity because it seemed
that's sure. The next. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think I've been kind of chatting and just asking questions so far in my role as moderator, but I'm going to slightly shift the conversation and wear a little bit of a different hat as speaking about last year, was it that Peter Jones had he has since moved to Mexico to teach at the Monterey Tech. And so that left a space in terms of the organizing that Tim Lloyd referred to as the substitute role. So here I have raised my hand, perhaps involuntarily even, and being on that. And when we talk about rethinking systems thinking, I'll share my approach, my perspective, and I would love to hear what others think. But oftentimes, as someone who's a little bit more on the novice side of systems thinking back in 2016, 17, when I started at OCAD, I would start to see a lot of the conversation become insular, and it became not necessarily only in a critical way, but insular in that there's often this term, whether people refer to themselves as systems thinkers or not, but that term had to be there in order for that conversation perhaps to be fully animated. And I was kind of challenging that about thinking about what can we learn from other topics as systems thinkers, rather than what can we learn from systems thinkers? Because I think that embrace a lot of the sweeping in perspective of multi-perspective inquiry. And so having the reins and having David and I as co-organizers, I put on a bunch of series last year or earlier this year that'll even continue about what can systems thinkers learn from X, and insert topic here. And so it was kind of a spiritual successor to what Tim and Elena were talking about no shortage of topics. And we've talked about video game design. We've talked about music cities. We've talked about evaluation. So all types of different topics without centering systems thinking so much as a focal point. Poetry, civic tech. Yes, we had a civic tech episode. And so that's kind of the path that I've been inheriting Systems Thinking Ontario on. I also want to be respectful of the tradition, and that tradition means being able to return to in person. Yes, Kelly, we will be returning to in person, but also opening up the affordances to doing online when we need to. I don't know if anyone has a comment around, especially those who've been in the system thinking communities for a long time. Where do you find the challenges and benefits of learning from topics that are not self-described as systems thinking? Is that resonating with anyone? Am I onto something? Or do how do you kind of filter what you kind of take in through that lens when you try to interpret it from a systems perspective? I'd love to hear from anyone. Jessica, yes, Jessica, we haven't heard from you in a while.
I think that's one of the things that I really do enjoy coming to Systems Thinking Ontario. Back then, I think, David touched on earlier about, the known and unknowns. And I don't know what I don't know. And I'm not sort of, especially in those times when I first started, coming across to System Thinking Ontario, and I really, I mean, I don't know a lot of things now still, but I know less then. And that really helped me to sort of open my eyes to different topics and different ways of perspective of looking at things. And just seeing the conversation that we had earlier on, and with people sort of commenting on sort of the, what is the example of that? What example of that? And helps me to sort of understand some of the concept that I could take from the readings, but not quite really understanding what it means in embodiment. And so I do appreciate that. So the diversity of topics that we can touch on with that. And I think we still need to have that, taking it for the grain of thought that, system thinking, it is a way of looking at something, but maybe not the only way, and into leaving room for that. And then I think that's also something that I'm learning along the way as well, and to appreciate that. And I think that's something I really do appreciate. And then sort of commenting on the in person versus online. And those I live in Mississauga at that time, and so coming into Toronto to meet to the in-person meeting was always a challenge. So I feel like I'm always the one that was late to the meeting. Miss the introduction, sort of, but and whatever little time that I have, that do make it in that period of time, and I really do appreciate the richness, of that conversation, or even the tangent that sometimes takes on from the subjects, because that, it's hard to sort of, to curate those different topics and different, on your own in a sense. And so to learning from different people and different perspective, and the different background that people bring in is definitely something that I really do appreciate. And the fact that it's online now that I could tap in whenever I have the time for, and that's also very, it's great, because then I feel like I have this group of people in this place where I can always sort of count on to say, oh, hey, what new things I should be learning now, or what's going on now, and I should, sort of, put my thinking cap on. And I do appreciate all the sort of the mentoring that David and Lena and Kelly and Tim and like everyone who was involved in and through that time. And so I think, for me, that sense of, oh, this is a place where I can go to. I don't know how it would have been developed if it just started from the online platform. And I feel, because I have, went into that in-person meeting, and I feel like, oh, hey, this is something familiar I can tap into. And that's how I feel. But not speaking to about everyone.
I think that's a good point that maybe goes underscored is the order in which there was relationships built offline that could then be semi-translated into an online setting versus had it gone another way, it might not be as, energized. And so that's a valid point. I also like your point, Jessica, about the tension between curating systems, which is extremely challenging, but also deriving meaning from a systems concept from a number of different reference points, which is why the endless stream of topics can actually be helpful in a way, because you can understand something from topic X, Y, and Z, even though it's the same concept. So I definitely appreciate that. Is there anyone else, any other reflections on this notion of, Perrin?
Hi. As I said, I study sort of sustainability transition, and I would say, and within my work, I talk about exactly this. So I appreciate you raising it. The idea that, really sort of complex global challenges, they're giving us kind of this subjective analysis by which to understand sort of systems and complex systems in more nuanced ways. And they're sort of raising the imperative to do so and to kind of expand thinking in those areas, both in concepts and methods and how we apply them, again, to kind of engage with critical challenges.
So you're saying this the sustainability one is like a is an analogous for you? Like there's a demonstration of which that community has a similar way of referring to different topics to make their subject more understandable?
What I'm saying is that it's sort of the problems sort of necessitate the lens, right?
Oh, I see. Okay, right.
Yeah. And it has actually, and I mean, in my own work, I talk about how the two sort of fields, sustainability and complex systems thinking, as well as systems thinking, have kind of evolved together in many ways. And it is sort of, and it and they do certainly evolve through, well, and resilience thinking is sort of the center point for that. Where you see kind of sort of sustainability with complexity kind of applied together in lots of different contexts, environmental and social.
And how would you describe that evolution, by the way, in your words?
How do I describe it?
How would you describe that evolution of sustainability and complexity together?
Yeah. I mean, I actually do study it over, like, as it sort of has been unfolding over the course of a number of different fields. So, for example, you can see it in ecological economics, you can see it in planetary health, global governance, as I said, resilience, even like restoration ecology. And so you sort of see each of these fields sort of understanding, like all of them are sort of coming to terms with the fact that, their field or the subject of study is more complex than what was originally, indicated. That, I mean, that's especially the case, for example, in resilience and ecological restoration, where you see, sort of ecosystems going through fluctuations over time, and we've had to kind of learn to kind of manage for that. And then the management, sort of the adaptive planning, that was something that was introduced, sort of early on, but then, like the management, the monitoring and analysis tools become sort of more sophisticated over time. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, very well said. Thank you. Maybe I'll offer another prompt to the group as we're kind of at the 10 minutes to the hour. We could kind of wind down or slowly bring it down. But I was wondering, are there any memorable systems thinking Ontario sessions that you've had that have either left a mark on your understanding, ones that stuck in your head? Is there any kind of, this is the chance where we get to go down memory lane basically for a few minutes. I was wondering if anyone around the room wants to share any memorable ones. I'll actually start. There's something that always stood out to me, and it was, and I re-met him again. It was David Mallory was sharing a little bit about his work out of York University, and he was the first that was introducing concepts of Rosen, Robert Rosen. And the metaphor, and I this was early in my years of trying to grasp systems thinking, so I didn't have a strong handle on it, but he really used that example of in which anticipatory systems, living systems, have a built-in capacity to anticipate, and that the trees would anticipate the reduction of sunlight, which would then transfer the energy away from their, they would start harnessing the energy, which is why the leaves would turn color. And so it was a coupling of this living system with its environment, and it had an inherent thing. So just the idea that, like, it kind of messes the causality in your head, why you might think, oh, the seasons change, the leaves change color, but there was a little bit of a bigger picture that stood out to me, perhaps also because it was one of the earlier ones that I attended. But that's my little systems thinking Ontario memory, as I always remember the anecdote about the leaves changing color and what's really going on behind that.
One of the things that we used to do was have summer conference debriefings. Because we used to go to the systems conferences and we come back. And I'm not sure if we actually need those anymore because the volume of content on YouTube these days is so large. But a lot of the stuff has been done online now. So during COVID, the ISSS actually moved the conferences online and they've been running hybrid conferences. So I don't know if we do or don't need those discussions anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, to be determined, right? I guess that's a second order effect of others going online in addition to everyone being affected by online is the sheer amount of content now available. And that's also poses its own challenges of how you filter all of that. But yeah, that's a good point about those debrief sessions. Kelly, did you have a memory, a systems thinking Ontario memory you wanted to share?
Yeah, it's actually not a memory, but because this is being recorded, and I just wanted to say, as somebody who is coming in extremely new to systems, I didn't know that systems was a science. Never mind that there were different branches. I remember thinking, how did I become a cybernetic into cybernetics or into physics? I would really encourage anybody who is seeing this recording to that it's a really welcoming group for open learning. And I'm really grateful for the community to have welcomed me in and not I don't know been dismissive or otherwise that I didn't know anything. But I certainly appreciate having learned from the group.
Thank you, Kelly. I appreciate it. Elena, you wanted to share something?
Well, I think one thing building on what Kelly says, is none of us know the whole systems field. And so we can all learn, but we all also have big gaps in our knowledge about what we know about in the systems field, what we're familiar with and don't really understand that well, and what we simply are clueless about. And I think for that reason, that sometimes having the conference debrief, it may not have to be the whole meeting, but I think it's helpful to kind of give people a little bit of signal about what else is going on in the field that maybe will be relevant to them or maybe not.
Yeah, and that connects back to the point that David Ng mentioned in that opening about the map of ignorance and unknown unknowns and what we may or may not know. I think that's a valuable point.
I really appreciated those. I'll just, since it came up, Elena, I don't know if we're, that's, I don't know if that was the topic of discussion, but those debriefs from the conference, I really, that was a way for me to learn about something that was happening far away and I wasn't there, and I was really interested in all the topics, and if I could have, I would have been at all of them, you know. So I, you know, you may have recalled, I might have been someone who was saying, hey, let's put the debrief in. Oh, the debrief should be, you know, because it was meaningful to me for sure. So I appreciate that. But I understand where you come from, David, yeah, to the point of practicality and availability of online resources now. Everyone can catch themselves up quite high fidelity on an event like that. The only thing I'll add to like meaningful things is we did, I still have this bottle that we shared one time to remember Sean.
Yeah,
who was an early contributor to the group, who was quite involved. And I remember I organized a session with him at one point. And the subject matter of that was something that was really interesting to me as well. Yeah, anyway, that's some, and many, many meaningful topics. And David Mallory comes to mind as well for me. Somehow that session ended up, I think, being a reason why I ended up organizing something with Peter Victor, which I also found is a really kind of meaningful activity around the degrowth kind of movement, and he had just released a book. So the whole connection with is it York, I guess, is environmental program, and the folks who started to show up from there, that really added a lot of energy and really rich content around the environmental and ecological systems thinking and all of that.
It looks like we'll go Stephen Davies and then maybe David Hawk if he's up next, but yeah, Stephen and then David.
Yeah, just to build off the York connection, I remember the ecological economics folks coming in one time and one of the graduate students positing the question of whether or not the climate crisis was an expression of our fear of death. And I thought that was one of the most insightful comments that I'd heard at Systems Thinking Ontario in a long time. But that's, I'm just trying to build off what Tim shared. What I was going to offer was a memorable session with Anthony Hodgson. Going back a few years now, could be 2015, 2016, maybe later. Anthony, associated with obviously the International Futures Forum, introduced the world system model to us, and then we actually played a version of the world game that Anthony had gamified, and I don't know, I can see some smiles, I see Kelly smiling, I think Kelly might have been there and maybe some others, but that was a memorable session. I thought, you know, it was an abbreviated version of the world game, you know, we only had a little bit of time, but I thought Tim says we won it. Okay, that's the end of that story.
Wonderful, thank you. David Hawk, you wanted to share?
If I might confuse things a little bit, might be worth noting that my introduction to a systems language began with a course I took from the Dean of Electrical Engineering, University of Pennsylvania. He was one of the developers of holography way back when, along with the person that actually developed it. He was something like his assistant and had this passion for holography. So he offered a course, which I took, And that was an amazing course. And he talked quite a bit about the basis for system sciences. And in fact, when the Acuff program was closed down, it was sent back to him. But in essence, that program then went back where it more or less began in engineering and under the directorship of this gentleman. But his work, and he had a couple of systems people, shall we say a couple of the gurus, I forget their names, but the ones that wrote lots of stuff that was talked about at the conferences, came and helped him teach that course. I think not very well, but he taught it masterfully. And the idea of how to get beyond two dimensions was really crucial for him, and how to get humans out of a two-dimensional rut, or whatever you'd like to call it. And so this work I'm about to go deeper into relative to system science on dimensionality comes very much out of his work and very much out of holography. And it just happens that I have a daughter who works for Apple in their artificial intelligence network. And she just got, what, after 3 months, her second promotion. And so she's taking over management of one of the new areas for artificial intelligence. And holography is very important for she. Otherwise, I'll disown her. But nonetheless, she's trying to make more sense of communication vis-a-vis AI, vis-a-vis including holography in the process. And so I think we have an interesting future relative to that. And I mean, I've talked about this with David Ng before, but this sort of six dimensions that people find themselves in begins with zero. And as you probably all know, if you've studied any math, zero is a point. And so people that are standing on a point and nothing else are pretty predictable. In essence, that's most politicians in most countries. People that have made it to a one-dimensional, in essence, are the people that are on a seesaw or trying to figure out which part of the digital they're in. So are you into entropy or negative entropy? And a lot of system science people are into negative entropy. That I've gone through much of the literature and pulled out the paragraphs where they argued for negative entropy. And unfortunately, they were wrong because they all died. And I somehow was hoping they were right, but they did pass on. There were funerals. So obviously they lost that bet. And then of course we have the second dimension, which is the major problem of all of us, particularly lawyers. This is the reason why lawyers, I put in a very special bad category, because almost everything they do is based on two-dimensional paper. They, in essence, cannot get beyond the paper. And also an awful lot of academics suffer from the same problem, the same limitation. But most youth that have a cell phone are developing the same problem. They're locked into two dimensions. And grandpa that sits and watches, shall we say, movies all night on his TV is also locked in two dimensions. So in essence, the majority of humans do not make it beyond the second dimension. And so in essence, how systems thinking would get people to think about more than that is the agenda I'm now working on. And so I'm doing a chart of how to put people in how to predict the category they're in based on about 5 minutes discussion and which of the dimensions they favor or are locked in. And of course, I won't go into it, but the fifth dimension is, of course, my hero. So the fifth dimension is well beyond all these. Anyway, is well beyond human limitations. But in essence, increasingly I've been telling children they really understand, want to understand the fifth dimension, listen to the various versions of Hallelujah. Eventually you'll get it. And so for me, Hallelujah is a good access point to get to the fifth dimension. It may well be spiritual, but it is not religious, because all religions have hierarchy, and the fifth dimension has no hierarchy. It does not allow hierarchy. It's much like nature. Humans like hierarchy because they're lazy, but the fifth dimension doesn't allow that crap. So at some point, the systems people, I think, will find this dimensionality somewhat helpful. And it began in a funny course on holography back in 1972. And I appreciate very much that dean that taught that course.
Yeah, sounds like we have a topic for a future systems thinking session around the fifth dimension.
Thank you.
Thank you, David Hawk. Yeah, as we're winding down, is there anyone else that wants to, anyone who hasn't spoken yet, who wants to share if you had a memorable Systems Thinking Ontario session or anything related to what we've been chatted about today as we wind down? Well, this is the part where then we would normally go for, what is it, David? Like Thai, Vietnamese food across the street. I don't believe we can pull that off digitally, but you know, we'll see once David Hawk's daughter works on some AI that might help us do that. Thank you, everyone, for joining the session. Really appreciated it. I know this was on an evening where there was a number of RSD sessions beforehand. So I know, Cheryl May, your battery's probably at low or negative entropy even. But I appreciate you all coming out tonight and sticking with this. We will next month. This one was a feature from RSD, so we were happy to be online and interact with a wider audience, which was fantastic. Next month, I'll just give you the heads up. I haven't written it online, but we are going to be in person. We will be talking, actually it's a topic that's come up before, but it's about what can systems thinkers learn from grief or grieving practices. And it's some of my associates and OCADU who've done an installation at Evergreen. So we may both interact with that and talk through that as we interact with that experience. So that will be coincidentally on Monday, November 11th as well, which is Remembrance Day for those in Canada here. So yeah, with that, I'll get that posted online and shared out, and then we're off for December. We usually have that one as just a quiet month when people are recouping. And then in the new year, we may oscillate. We may do a month in person, a month online, or we may flip it around depending on season and availability. So thank you so much. You can definitely find out more on the Systems Thinking Ontario website. There's also a notice board as well that we kind of post to, and looking forward to having you all on the next one. Enjoy the rest of your evening, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.
Is there time for me to make a short announcement?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Just thank you, everyone. It's wonderful to wrap up what has been months and months and months of work with a final session here on your 125th meeting, which is indeed an inspiration. So just wanted to note that this is the last formal session of the online. So, I mean, I could talk for hours about online versus in-person and all of the components of that, but I won't. But I will say that it looks like we have RSD 14 in Toronto next year. The new dean of OCAD, Leslie Ann Noel, has enthusiastically embraced that idea. And we had RSD 12 last year. So I know some of you, Kelly, you were there. That was a good event. We had 150 or so people enrolled, signed up to do that. We've had, this year we've had over 1,200 people online. So interesting how, you know, the online space, you know, creates this opportunity for a festival, which is fun. But I just wanted to put that in everyone's diary that next October it looks like will be Toronto. And obviously we'll be drawing. I know, good. Alana will get to meet. and obviously we'll be talking throughout the year. This comes out of some work I did all year on adjacency. So I was experimenting with the potential of adjacency to build communities and support transdisciplinary work. So that was the inspiration for this. And Zaith came in very gamely to be our current SIN systems thinking. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, you're very welcome. That's super exciting. I think that presents a real opportunity when we're all together, and obviously doing it in Toronto is going to be really ripe for connecting in person and bringing all the best. Sorry, Elena, you were about to say something as well.
No, I just wanted to say thank you and looking forward to RSD being in Toronto.
Yeah, good.
Wonderful. Okay, have a great night, everyone. Take care. Be well. Bye now.